AJ Preller.
Do if he was here right now. He'd make a plan and he'd follow through. That's what
AJ Preller. AJ Preller.
Was in the Olympics skating for the gold. He did 2 stout cows and a triple lutz while wearing a blindfold.
AJ Preller.
Was in the Alps fighting grizzly bears. He used his magical fire breath and saved the maiden's fair. So what?
AJ Preller.
No, you if he were here today. I'm sure he'd kick an ass or two.
AJ Preller.
I want this feature about
it. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Gwintelligence Podcast. I am HJ Preller. I'm so upset. I can't even get the intro out right now.
You know what? We should do a bit where we just take all of our flubs and we put them all together.
What if we added like a sound effect to it or something?
Wouldn't that be amazing?
We can do drops.
Why doesn't anybody do that?
I don't know. Like, why is no one innovating in the area of podcasting /media creation/content creation?
That's a great idea. I'll get to work on that.
Yeah, let's work on that. Anyways, I'm H.J. Preller, joined as always by Corey Stewart.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy Thursday.
Is it happy?
You. No, it's not happy. Nobody's happy.
I'm just flabbergasted about what to talk about today with the highs and lows of this baseball team. The only thing that keeps me going is knowledge that we're always hard at work coming up with ways to make this podcast the best podcast it can be. Innovating new ideas. Workshopping new concepts. Things that people are too scared to do. And yet here we are, producing the number one ad-free, completely free podcast.
And also the most interactive podcast.
Hey, did you know we're the only podcast with two natives? Wow.
Incredible.
Oh, wait, I was born in Santa Barbara.
Oh, wait, I was born in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, boy. Wow. You know what? We're the only podcast with two transplants.
Yes.
Transplants at a young age that grew up here. That's a narrow niche that we've taken.
It is.
Well, look, we've added a new segment to this podcast. We'll unveil it later in the show. It's very exciting. Thinking of getting into the jacuzzi today, you know, for complete relaxation, nude.
Yeah, of course, nude.
But I think we're going to save that for future. We can't unveil all of the innovations that only we are doing at once.
Well, right? And I have some waxing that I need to get done before I'd like to do that.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, okay. I as well.
Great.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I like to be completely bare down there. Yeah,
like a bowling lane.
It's not a personal matter here. This is a public knowledge. The Padres had a devastating loss last night. They had a devastating loss the last three nights. We faced a division rival who I think many fans, including me, for much of the season thought they're smoke and mirrors and they're going to come back to earth. I don't think the Giants are that bad.
What? How many have they won in a row now?
They don't even have like Lamont Wade playing, who's like the third best first baseman in the league. Like,
yeah, and they've won 10 in a row.
We talked about it. There was an honest conversation on MLB Network on who they'd rather have on their team, Pete Alonso or Lamont Wade, and he's out.
Wow.
So, not great.
Not great.
All kinds of failures. The focus, I think, earlier in the series was on Bob Melvin and bullpen management and the bullpen pitchers, completely overlooking that we've had a runner thrown out at third on like horrendous, just horrendous plays in close games decided by, you know, one or a few runs.
Yes.
Just across the board, what did they go with runners in scoring position last night? Like 1 for 18?
Something like that. Yeah. It was brutal.
Horrendous.
Absolutely horrendous. Yeah.
Just double plays galore.
And also last night they had the lead runner was on base 7 of the 9 innings.
Wow.
And we scored 2 runs.
That's research, folks. Corey showed up here with yet another handwritten sheet of paper with notes on it. You don't see that from the other guys.
No, you don't. They don't even prep. They just go in, crack the mics.
too high on weed, if you ask me.
Oh, yeah.
We've talked about that.
Yeah, we have.
Okay, so devastating loss last night. The focus today is obviously on the umpiring last night. The call against Gary Sanchez for blocking the lane on what could have been a pivotal pivotal play. I don't really like doing the playing it out where, well, if they had called him out, then the Padres would have won 2-1. Like, it's hard to say, like, the approaches are all different when it's a 1-1 game or 1-0.
But
like,
that half inning ends at 1-0. And instead, it ends up at 4-0.
The slate is clean, at least, for whatever happens next. I don't think it's a cascading thing where you can isolate it and say, well, then everything after that would have happened as it would have. But... Yeah. Unprofessional, Corey.
Very unprofessional. I'm so sorry, everyone.
That was his alarm to head over here. He showed up early. So in a way, that lack of professionalism actually reflected his professionalism.
Thank you so much. Yes. Thank you for acknowledging that.
What did you think of the play? Let's preface it, though. All of the media has said MLB sent out a memo yesterday because... Two nights ago, this was obviously a hot-button issue with the Rangers game where Bruce Bochy got kicked out of the game when their runner got called out at home.
Right. Terrible call.
Off former Padre Travis Jankowski's throw.
Okay. Yes.
So, teams were made aware of it, right?
Yes.
This was not a new rule, and it was highlighted by Major League Baseball yesterday to teams. I don't know if that flowed down or how it happened. Shockingly, no one in old media asked Bob Melvin about this specific thing, about how they prepped their team based on the memo. But Gabe Kapler did get quoted in the AC newsletter this morning that he did get it, briefed his coaches, and briefed his players yesterday, and they had like a real meeting about it. So take that for what you will, especially when we discuss things later.
Yeah.
What were your thoughts on the call?
Obviously, he was thrown out by, 12 feet, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So just that alone, he's out.
Imagine if the throw had been online to home plate. How great it would have been. Like, the margin between where the runner was and where it would have shown up at home plate. Like, it would have been incredible.
Oh, truly, yeah. Sanchez would have been able to catch it. Have a cocktail, and then tag him as he came in.
Probably could have beat one off then.
Rub one out real quick. Yeah. He was out. He was out. And then you can go back and forth about blocking the plate. Did the throw pull him off? Blah, blah, blah. You throw all that off to the side, and he was thrown out by 12 to 15 feet or whatever it was. So that's where they really fucked it up bad.
Sure.
Right? But... What do you think?
Okay, so I went back. I didn't watch the Rangers play until this all came up yesterday.
Okay.
I thought the umpire's call... Hey, let me say, the call's stupid. I think it's a dumb call.
Yeah.
But I also think it's a dumb rule.
Yeah.
I think they should allow hitting again.
Oh! You want guys to get trucked?
I think it's too soft. Yeah, I missed the trucking. Wasn't that always like one of the most exciting plays there is?
It was really exciting.
And if Jason Kendall wasn't so brittle and whoever else got hurt.
Posey.
Posey, yeah.
I mean, it's the Posey rule. It is based off of the Posey's injury.
People get hurt.
Yeah.
They've taken one of the most exciting plays in baseball away from us.
But you don't, but on that rules, flip side, you don't want guys to get hurt.
Okay, but these rules are what we get because it's not just part of that is protecting the catcher. Why this rule exists, right?
Right.
So I thought the call in the Rangers game was more egregiously bad. I looked at that and I couldn't even rationalize in my head what the argument was for the call.
Right. Exactly.
The Gary Sanchez one, I can look at it and say, okay, I don't agree with it, but I can kind of see where if you isolate Gary Sanchez before he receives the ball, sticking his left leg out to push the runner further out of the base path, I could rationalize that if I was a Giants fan and say, look what he did. Like, that's pushing him out of the path. And then I could further rationalize it because Jesse Agler pointed this out on the radio broadcast, but, you know, right at the moment, obviously Jesse knows the rules. He's very sharp, memorizes everything.
Yes.
the rule does leave it open to where if a runner is clearly thrown out in advance, that the rule doesn't apply. And I guess if I was playing devil's advocate, I could say the throw when it was received by Gary Sanchez and where the runner was at the time, they weren't that far apart. It wasn't that there wasn't a huge separation where you could say he was definitely out. He was out. He was going to be out, right?
Oh, but, for
but
sure.
I think that I think the spirit of that call is if the throw had been online to home plate and Gary Sanchez is standing in front of home plate and tags him out and he's 12 feet away at the time the throw came.
Yeah.
I kind of think that's what the spirit of the rule was. In the case of this play, he was 3 feet away when the ball arrived. I don't know.
He was pretty far.
Look,
I mean,
don't get me wrong. The call was dumb. Yeah. I think it was wrong.
Right.
Especially that moment of the game. I just thought it was wrong.
Yeah.
But I thought it was less egregious than the Rangers call.
That's fair. I'll agree with you on that.
And in the end, yeah, we can play what if with how the game would have wound up afterwards. But the team went 1-for-18 with runners in scoring position.
You got to score runs.
Yeah.
You have to score runs.
You know, it wasn't a good game.
No. No, and especially when you would look the lead runner, 7 out of 9 innings. And when we talk about the opportunities that they had, you know, right after that call, which was in the 5th inning, and it's 4-0, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, everybody thought there's no chance that they're going to win this game. And so I was like, all right, well, I'm going to, you know, I'm turning this thing off. But I wanted to watch the next half inning just to see how they would respond, you know?
Yeah.
And we get a single from Soto. We get a walk from Manny, so we got first and second, nobody out. And then Xander comes up and hits a shallow garbage pop fly to left field, which does nothing.
Yeah.
And then Jake hits into a double play. And like, and you're hoping after what happened at the plate and how, you know, you went from just being down 1-0 when it was, by the way, it was bases loaded, nobody out.
Right.
For the Giants. And it looked like they were going to get out of it.
With one run. Which was incredible.
Yeah. That's great. You know, like, you feel really good about that afterwards. And instead, they go into the dugout. They stand around for 10 minutes or however long it took them to make that fucking call.
Yeah.
And then once that's done, then they go back out and they give up 3 more runs and it's 4-0. And now you're completely deflated. And I was hoping, though, that the anger from the call, which they obviously all thought was bullshit, Bob Melvin losing his shit. Like, okay. Like,
this is the spark.
Maybe there would be some kind of a spark. Maybe, you know, like, I just wanted to see, are they going to fight or are they going to fold? And it looked like there was a little bit of fight. And then Xander comes up. He just can't. He can't put any power into anything at all.
The hits he's getting are C9 ground balls to the infield.
Yes, exactly.
Bloopers that fall in.
Like Trent Grisham hits, basically. Well,
I'm going to dissent.
Grisham's been better.
We'll talk about this in a little bit.
Yeah, during the San Francisco series, he's had some good hits and all that. He's still striking out. Like, anyway, so he comes up and like he's got no power. And then Jake's been a disaster and hits into a double play. And it's like, and that was the third double play of the game.
Yeah.
At that point,
because they had let off every inning up to that point with the first runner getting on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, the first 6 innings they had the lead runner on, and didn't get a run out of it.
Right. It's there's a lot of problems here beyond the umpire's call.
Yeah. So which leads us into Bob Melvin. How does Bob Melvin change that? And if he can't change that, and you fire Bob Melvin, the next guy's going to fix that?
Right. And this has been. Here's my opinion on manager talk in general. It has to get really bad, like Tingler bad, where you can easily see, everyone can see that the team has tuned out their manager, right? Like it was the case with Tingler. They actively disliked him, probably did the opposite of what he asked.
Just like Andy.
Because he was so disrespectful.
Same thing with Andy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There was a point in Andy's tenure where, they liked Andy. But you could see the tipping point, right?
Yeah.
And I don't see that with Bob Melvin.
No.
I think that the players respect him, and Bob Melvin has a track record he can point to, unlike Andy and Tingler.
He's been a manager for 20 years.
A successful one.
And he has a winning record.
Yeah.
And the teams that he managed before here, Seattle, Arizona, Oakland, they didn't exactly have giant payrolls that he was leaning on. They had tiny-ass payrolls. And the guy still has a winning record in his 20-year managerial career. He's a respected
And he can point to that in the clubhouse. And I think players respond to that.
Yeah.
I think people that blame the manager for everything have this football mindset. Like they think like Norv Turner in the Chargers days. Like you would hear that was what you would hear on the radio every day. Yeah. Fire Norv. He doesn't know what he's doing. He's not a leader of men. And it's been shown statistically, like coaches have a much bigger effect on the game in football than they do in baseball. I think that people are applying their football mentality over to baseball and being like, okay, well, we got to fire Melvin and get some new blood in. Like, okay, well, who are we going to bring in? Like Mike Schilt's, the guy that all the Cardinals players hated, and which is why they fired him.
Yeah.
What's he going to change? Better? Is Manny? You think Manny, Tatis, and Soto are going to respond to a guy that all the players hate? I mean,
okay, so Matt Williams.
You don't think Matt Carpenter has some stories about Mike Schilt?
Right.
So
Waka?
Right. What's the plan here? You know?
Yeah. Who's going to be better?
Right. And we'll get into it, but like, if you really want to get into it, you're going to give AJ another manager?
Oh my God.
How many managers is the guy going to get? Because if you hire another manager, you're now giving AJ another 3 years here.
Okay. They fired Andy Green in September of 2019. Okay. They fired Jace in October of 21. And let's say they lose today, right? And today you have Snell going, who's been spectacular. They're throwing Wood, who's not spectacular. Yeah. You have lost three in a row. You're fighting for your lives at this point. They're 9.5 back in the division and 6 games out of a wild card at this point. Okay,
with a huge number of teams between them and the playoff position.
Yeah, the Cubs are ahead of us. The Brewers are ahead of us. The Phillies are ahead of us in the wild card race. Okay, and we're in fourth place in our own division. Today, if you lose today, if they can't pull off a win today, it's bad, right? So what do you do? Do you make a big change and then you fire Melvin? What? How is that gonna fix anything?
I mean, it's a desperation move, I guess. But.
Yeah, but and then we have AJ. He's gonna do this. So we're gonna fire three managers in less than 4 years.
And you're gonna give the general manager that hired them another shot at another manager. Shot at
that we're gonna be
when you do that, you don't just get the rest of the year. You hire that, you let him hire a new manager. The narrative is gonna be, hey, we gotta let this manager play for a couple seasons, yeah. see what we've got before we can make changes at the top.
Right.
Are we all ready for that commitment right now?
No.
This team is the team we've got. Right?
Yes.
There's not a lot of payroll flexibility to add players. No. There's not a lot. There's nothing in the minor leagues to call up. Eggy Rosario is apparently missing. Like, literally missing. He was supposed to be in the lineup like 2 weeks ago. And the Padres have said like every day after that, he's going to be in the lineup. Don't worry.
We played one game in El Paso on June 6th.
He's literally missing. Like, they don't know where he is. Like, there's nothing there for us. You want to call up who's the pitcher from spring training that everyone had Groom. A boner for?
Groom.
Yeah, Groom.
Yeah.
He was
yeah.
like his yeah. 18 yeah. ERA in El Paso. You think that's going to turn around things?
It's not that the cupboard is bare. There isn't a cupboard. There's not even a cupboard.
Yeah, it's gone. It's just drywall.
It's like a tornado went through and took out just the kitchen. And you walk in and go, where the fuck is everything?
Right.
There's nothing there.
There's no changes here. Like, this is the team. This is it. We might get a reliever or something. There's nothing else coming. So what's the point in changing the manager at this point? Like, it's ride or die with this roster. I think we said that even from the beginning of this season. This is it. We're riding or dying with what we got.
Well, if you do go off and you fire Melvin, it's embarrassing, okay?
Super embarrassing.
It's super embarrassing. He hasn't even been here for 2 years.
And
he took you to the NLCS last year without Fernando Tatis Jr.
What manager do you think we're going to hire? With the guy that fired one of the most respected managers in baseball mid-season after making the NLCS last year?
Yeah, 19 months on the job,
yeah.
And you're going to blow him out.
You wonder why everyone says Bruce Bochy didn't want to come here and manage for AJ Preller.
Of course he wasn't
There's
coming
why.
Here. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I heard that it wasn't real popular around a lot of managers when they fired Bud Black mid-season.
What does the fan base want? He hired Andy Green, And everybody was pissed because, like, he was a fucking nobody who had no experience. And then he fires him and brings in another guy doing the same thing. And it's like, and everybody's screaming, we need a respected manager that has a winning track record. It's been around for a while, blah, 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 blah. Okay, we went out and got the top guy, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, who else would you have wanted?
He wasn't even available. Yeah, like, we made him available.
Right, yes. So you got that, and now, just months after winning or going to the NLCS, you're going to fire that guy because nobody's hitting? That's his fault?
Look, at some point, like, don't we need to look at the common denominator here?
What is the common denominator?
Over the last decade, what's the common denominator? It's definitely not manager, because we've had like seven managers over that time.
It's AJ Preller.
Yeah. Interesting about AJ Preller, did you notice that our beloved Too Much Mortons had part two of his thread last night?
He's letting it all go, isn't he?
He is.
Yeah.
And we've come to a vehement defense of him.
Yes.
I know he sourced it all. I know he has multiple sources. It's not just one disgruntled employee.
No,
it's not. People inside the building. It's people outside the building. It's people outside the organization. It's former employees. Like, he's gone above and beyond to validate things with corroborating stories. And the weird thing is, everyone has the same story. And weirdly enough, it's the same story that all of us can see with just a basic eye test of like the public sources that we get about AJ.
Right.
He's micromanaging. He insists on doing everything himself. He doesn't delegate important tasks to people. And a lot of people are like, well, don't you want him to be doing all that stuff? Okay, well, he's not general manager. He's president of baseball operations.
Yeah.
He wanted the title, right?
Right.
He could have just been a general manager, and they promoted him up to president of baseball operations. So, yeah, his tasks and his responsibilities are different than they are when he's a general manager.
Yes.
The expectations of how you delegate work is different as a president. That's I think what Tommy was kind of highlighting here. And hilariously, I liked his tweet about the team is still relying on running times, sprint times, where they're running like shuttle runs or something. Like, this is seventh grade gym class, and they're timing them. And then if they then they have to run it again, and if they're too slow, then they get put into remedial running, basically. And it was pointed out to Tommy that, well, now the players figured it out, and now they just run slow in the first one and runs fast in the second one. Like, it's just the dumbest training. Meanwhile, other teams are sending their people to driveline, and they're having advanced analytical cameras in the bullpen sessions before the game, and like giving real time feedback. And we're running like shuttle runs in the outfield. It's ridiculous. I'm sure we all made fun of the whole Will Myers, you know, when Andy made them do relay drills in September.
Yeah, September, dude.
This is worse. Now it makes me wonder, who do you think told Andy to run relay drills in September? Was it Andy or was it AJ?
Like, I need video of Jake Cronenworth with one of those parachute things on his back.
Pulling the sled. No, that's too advanced. That's like Division III college level training. Like, we're talking junior high level in the gym.
It's like field day in sixth grade. Yeah.
They're going to play capture the flag afterwards and steal. So they're going to do a Red Rover in the outfield. Stories in the clubhouse are going to be amazing about how great the grip strength is for Red Rover between Manny and Tatis. Can't get through that. Just hilarious, but confirmed a lot of what we've seen over the years. And I'll also point out, confirms what actual old media journalists like Ken Rosenthal have said in detail.
Yes.
So you can, I saw some individuals on Twitter that are closer with AJ try to defend him and say, oh, this is just unsourced hearsay.
It's not.
And look, if it was that on its own, okay, maybe we could say that. I disagree. I know he sourced it, but for the external reader that hasn't seen or knows that, okay. But when it starts corroborating with everything that's been reported by old media journalists, by what we see, by what everyone sees, where there's smoke, there's fire, right?
Absolutely.
And look, if the team makes the playoffs and advances deep into the playoffs, okay, his method worked, right?
Yeah.
And it'll take the heat off him for another year. But if they miss the playoffs, and I would argue if they lose in the wild card round, if they get there, I think there's got to be talk about what to do here.
Yeah.
Because the implications are beyond just a failed season. I mean, this season is probably the most important season in franchise history. All your key players are right at the precipice of falling off the aging curve if they haven't already started declining down the aging curve. But you've also faced with the big question of what to do with Soto. Do you re-sign him? Maybe he won't. Do you trade him? And if you trade him, do you want AJ making that decision?
Do you trust AJ to make a good trade?
And what are his motivations? Is it to save his job, to win immediately because he's got one more year to prove himself?
Right.
If so, then you can say goodbye to Jackson Merrill, Ethan Salas, whoever we have left in the farm system, because AJ's going to cash that in for a one-year run. This is something that Marver used to bring up on the podcast, and it's another football analogy. But it's the same case of a football coach who's in, you know, is looking on pace to go 7-9 and is going to get fired. He has got a quarterback that he's at risk of injuring for the future or something, right? He's not going to bring in the backup. He's going to play that guy because he needs to get to 8-8 to not get fired, right? And in turn, he's putting at risk the future years with that behavior. It's the putting Drew Brees into the last game of the Chargers game where he gets hurt, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It leads to irrational decision-making for self-preservation.
Yeah.
And so you have to ask yourself, if we're in that position at the end of the season, do any of us want AJ making a desperation move to save himself? I don't think so.
I don't.
It doesn't mean you have to tear things down if you get a new GM. The Phillies brought in Dave Dombrowski, and he just continued the path of what they were doing. There's a lot of cases where, in San Diego, we're obviously just influenced by the past, right? Where every new change leads to a teardown, which leads to 10 years of rebuilding, which leads to misery. Strangely enough, other teams don't follow that path. Like, they actually build on what they have with a new GM and try to continue winning.
Yeah.
That's not unheard of.
We have real PTSD.
I know it's a foreign concept
don't
here.
We?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Deservedly so.
Well, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely.
We've been abused for decades.
So if AJ does, let's say AJ trades Soto, sure. Right? So there's two ways to go with that. You're going for major league ready talent.
To fill other holes.
To fill other holes, right? A couple other holes or three holes.
Like, let's just speak in hypothetics. Like, Waka's going to opt out. Snell's probably gone.
Hater's gone.
Phrase base is a problem. A closer is a problem. So yeah, if you could turn Soto into three major league pieces that fill those spots and cumulatively are more valuable than what we had, then that's not a rebuild move. That's a win now move. There's ways to do it.
Yeah.
It's just we don't know what AJ's motivations are going
to
be.
But you have to trust that he's going to identify the right players to bring back for that.
Sure.
You have to also, there has to be a team that's willing to trade three of those types of players.
A lot
for
of what
one.
Ifs.
There's so
but
many
it, but
what
it really
ifs.
Comes down on who do you want making the decision.
Yeah.
And it's happened in the past with the Padres history. Like Adrian Gonzalez, it was known he wasn't going to, the team wasn't going to tender him an offer, right?
Right.
To extend him. And it was known that the next GM after Kevin Towers, their major responsibility would be to decide what happens with Adrian. So they let the season play out. After Towers left. Did Towers get fired after the season? He got fired after the season.
I think so.
Yeah. So, they didn't move on Adrian, right? In fact, the interview questions that they gave when they interviewed for that the next GM was surrounding, what do you guys think we should do with Adrian? Like, what do you think a good trade would be? Or what do you think, that was the criteria they used to select it. And they ended up hiring Jed Hoyer, who was then entrusted with making the trade for Anthony Rizzo and a bunch of zeros.
Yeah.
I kind of see that as like a hypothetical for what could happen. You know,
oh yeah.
If they fire AJ, it's like, look, what do you guys see for a path forward here to a World Series? Like the core's here. That's what they're going to base the criteria on, and I don't have a problem with that.
Well, yeah, look, because obviously you can't trade Soto for prospects,
right?
Because by the time those prospects are ready, Xander and Manny are going to be in wheelchairs.
They're already there. They could be there. I don't know.
Yeah, they're in
by
walkers already. You know, so it can't be Double A kids, Triple A kids, it can't be that.
Right. But I think my point is that when they hire a new GM, the criteria they used to select it is, how do you get us from here to a World Series in the next year or two?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be, how do we, the questions they asked AJ at the time were probably like, okay, how do we rebuild everything? How do we do it on the, how do we most economically build this team?
How do we get to fucking 500? And how long did that take?
Yeah.
How many years did it take for him to get to 500?
Games in September is what they always said.
Yeah. Right. How do we sell more beer?
Yeah. It's just like, it's completely different. And so yeah, I don't see it as a disaster if they move on from him. If we come to a losing season, because I don't know how you come back from that.
Yeah, because there's going to be a lot of holes to fill for next season. There is.
And not a lot of money. Yeah. I mean, they're dropping Snell's relatively modest salary for a 2-starter.
What does he make, $12 million or something like that, 12, I think, 14, this year?
Something 12, like 14? That.
Yeah, it's not much.
Hader makes good money. So you're clearing maybe like 30 mil between the two, I think, a little less. Waka makes 4 or 6 or something, right?
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, he's gone.
So with 36 million, you've got to fill at least two starting pitching roles with no one in the minors, unless you're counting Ryan Weathers. No one's doing that, though. recently demoted, I saw, as we speculated
Didn't he walk like 6 guys the other day?
He totally sucks. He sucks.
He's so bad.
There's like nothing to build on there.
No.
So you've got 2 starting roles to fill. You've got...
Oh, you know what people are going to say about the starting roles, though?
What?
Well, what about Morojo?
Jesus. Jesus Christ. The guy that's thrown 37 innings like every season for his whole career.
Yeah, we just keep hearing that. Yeah. Oh, well, Morojo can do it.
Oh, don't you know about Jason Groom or whatever in the minors? Padres are going to disappear him like they disappeared Eggy Rosario pretty soon.
And we also have Carpenter again next year, so...
Oh, God. He has a guaranteed second year?
It's his option.
I'm sure there was a real bidding war for Matt Carpenter. Had to do that.
2 years, $12 million guaranteed.
At least Cruz is only here this year.
Yeah, and he's only $1 million.
Yeah.
Which is, And at this point.
Well, he's been worth negative 0.1 war so far, so it's actually
fantastic.
He owes us some money.
Southern California, you owe me money.
Hey, so I did this. I did some real analysis. Look at this printout that I have here.
There's a full spreadsheet right here.
I did want to take a look at just going through some of the players we've had and identifying where the real deficiencies are on this team.
Okay.
Let's play a game. Hey, that's what radio shows do, right? They play games.
They play
to
games.
Engage their audience.
Yes.
I'll give you a player, and you tell me if they are performing at or above or below their expected war at this point in the season. Ooh. Are they overperforming or underperforming? Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Juan Soto.
He's underperforming.
And to preface this is based off of Zips projections, which feed into, and we're using F WAR for this.
Okay.
Which Zips uses as well.
Okay. I would guess because the expectations were so high and I think he's doing, I mean, for the most part, really well.
Yeah.
Him and Tatis are.
He was probably projected for
More than what he's got going. Yeah. And especially because he had that first month wasn't great.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say underperforming.
You're right. Yes. So so basically I prorated the Zips projections down to where are we at? 77 games, I think.
Something like that. Yeah.
Basically a straight up 77 divided by 162 times the expected war.
Okay.
Projected war.
Okay.
So projected war at this point is 3 war. He was projected for 6.6 over the season. He is at 2.6 right now. So he's underperforming what was projected by 0.4.
Okay.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
But the slow start probably played into that.
Right. Yeah. But man, he is hitting the ball. Eno this morning was on Ben and Woods and was talking about how he has more hard hit balls, I think, his percentage is the highest in the league or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, and you could see him closing the gap as well, making up for that bad first month.
He definitely is.
Because the pace I saw in this is that he's rapidly closing the gap in the delta between projected and current.
And also, we should mention going to the opposite field, which he was not doing at the beginning of the year at all. And now it's like, that's where he's going. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, and that's when he's That's when he's Juan Soto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Fernando Tatis Jr. I'll preface this and say that Zips took into account that he was suspended for 20 games. So okay. I also adjusted the formula to be 77 divided by 142 because he missed the first 20 games. So that is taken into account already.
Overperforming?
Yes. He was projected for 4.7. He's at 2.4 right now. He's projected for 4.7, adjusted projected 2.4 for the number of games.
Okay.
And then actual war, 2.9.
Okay.
So he's exceeded it by 0.5.
And nobody was expecting the defense.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The defense, honestly, the hitting, too. He's overperforming in every regard.
And he got fucked out of an outfield assist last night.
Yeah. And he had a slow streak, too.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
So,
yeah.
Even with the slow streak, he's still overperforming.
Okay.
Okay, Ha-Seon Kim.
I would say middle of the road. I would say mid. I'd like average.
It's close.
Okay.
So Zips liked him. They projected 3.4 war for him. He is at 0.5 right now. He's at 1.8. I'm sorry. 1.8.
Okay.
And the adjusted projected for this point of the season, 1.6. So he's overperforming by 0.2.
And a lot of that's the defense.
Mostly defense. But
yeah. And he's had kind of a bad little stretch,
he's
too.
He's been an average hitter.
Yeah.
He's been almost a league average hitter at a position where league average hitters are rare. So across the board, he's overperformed statistically. Okay. Yu Darvish.
I would say underperformed.
Overperformed.
Really?
And Zips didn't like him. Zips thought he was a 2.2 war player this year. He's already at 1.5. So he's exceeded the projection at this point of the season by 0.5, which surprised me, honestly. And it's not as much. Well, actually, 1.5 war is number two on the staff right now. So
that's great. I mean, considering the start that he had, because obviously he was delayed a little bit because of the World Baseball Classic. And he's had two clunkers.
Yeah.
Two really bad ones,
right? And the clunkers
right?
are what we remember.
Yeah.
But overall, he's overperforming, which is good. Michael Wacha.
He's got to be overperforming. Yeah.
Zips thought he was a one war player. He's at 1.7 already.
Already?
So he's exceeding his projected war at this point of the season by 1.2.
Wow.
By far the leader on the staff.
Wow.
All right. Jake Cronenworth.
I would guess that he is underperforming the most out of anybody except for maybe Nola and... Yeah, Nola. Yeah.
He's worse than Nola. Zips loved him. Zips thought he was a 4.5 player. He's at 0.1 right now. He's underperforming by 2 war where he should be at this point of the season. There's all kinds of reasons for it. He's not hitting... he's playing first base for some reason. There's a multitude of reasons for it, but he is our least valuable. He is our most, sorry, not least valuable, our most underperforming player on the roster.
It surprises me that he's worse than Nola in this criteria, but wow.
We'll go to Nola. He obviously underperformed. He underperformed by 1.8 war. The thing with Nola is expectations were actually higher than I expected. 2.1 war for him for the season.
That's crazy.
He's at negative 0.8 right now. So he is underperforming by negative 1.8. So the expectations were lower. He's performing worse. It's just that the difference between what was expected and what he is at is less than with Cronenworth.
Okay.
He is objectively a worse player. He is the worst player on the roster, statistically.
He's got to be close to being one of the worst players in baseball.
Yeah, like the major league record for negative war is like 2.4, negative 2.4, 2.5, something like that. Because we had him, remember Alexi Ramirez?
Yes.
He was campaigning for breaking the record for a while. Because you have to be super bad... But play a position or where they're so weak that they don't have anyone to replace you. Usually when you're that bad, you just get taken out of the lineup.
Yeah, you're. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Here in San Diego, we keep playing them. Like Alexei Ramirez and Aaron Nola. Yeah.
What are we
Austin Nola.
Yeah. Who are you bringing up?
All right. Let's go Manny Machado.
Manny's got to be under.
Under. He's at 0.9. Zips thought he was 4.8 this year. So he's underperforming by negative 1.3. He is the fourth most... fourth most underperforming player on the team. That's what the eye test tells us, right?
And the defense has been pretty good.
Pretty good. It's less than what was projected. But what was projected was excellent.
Yeah.
So
okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. There's nobody in baseball that I would rather have defensively at third base than him.
Right.
He still makes...
Steady.
Just insane...
He makes the steady plays.
He makes the steady plays, but he also makes the falling out of the beyond the foul ball, the foul pole line or the foul line or whatever. Yeah. Like, I mean, wow.
High baseball IQ on what to do on certain plays as well. Not on the base paths, but definitely on the field.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Did you see his comment last night about him getting thrown out of third?
He had to take the chance.
He's like, he made a gold glove play. What the fuck he did? I could have thrown you out. Jesus Christ.
It had like a slow lob into the relay.
It was dumbest play. I don't even think he had tagged yet when it actually landed in his glove.
No.
He then touched the bag and then he went right. And like,
left fielder did lob it into the shortstop. Yeah, and then the shortstop was like, oh, easy pickings.
Yeah, like, bink. Here you go. Yeah. Man, he's dump truck ass. Halfway. Yeah. Come
Very
on.
Sexy,
yeah.
though.
He made a gold glove play. Shut up.
It wasn't gold glove at all.
Stop.
Okay, I've got two more.
Okay.
Joe Musgrove.
Ooh, that's a tough one. That's another one that I would say is like probably right on par.
Negative 0.8.
Wow, okay.
I can point to some things here.
Yeah, Mexico City.
No, injury time.
Okay.
So Zips projects out innings pitch based on health, right?
So Mexico City and the injury situation.
He had some slow starts in the beginning when he came back from the injury.
The Mexico City one was really bad.
Really bad, and that's affecting things, obviously.
Yeah.
So I kind of see that as an outlier.
He got lit in that way. I don't know how many runs he got on that one, but that was brutal.
8 million.
Yeah.
Ooh. Last one. Okay. Xander Bogaerts. Actually, no. Two more.
Okay.
Trent Grisham.
Lower?
Negative 1.1 below expectations. So he's at 0.5 right now. He was projected for 3.4. Zips liked him.
You know what's... And I rip on him all the time because he can't hit. And he's never going to hit. And I know he's had a decent series here in San Francisco. Great, whatever.
I think he's been better.
Okay.
I'm going to go to bat for Trent Grisham.
Okay. Well, I hope you don't strike out looking as he does every other at bat. But what's also killing him is he really hasn't been that great defensively this year. I mean, he's had some pretty shitty...
Yeah.
I mean, he's obviously he's had some really great plays, which he does. We get one of those every, what?
So did Alexi Amarista in center
you'd
field.
Have one, you know, and we get one of those every week and a half, something like that with Trent. But he's also had some where he's overrun it, where he's like...
He's got a jello arm.
Not him.
He's not throwing lasers like Tatis.
Is a joke.
Imagine, I know a lot of people want Tatis to play center field, and I can see it from a value standpoint of improving his war, but imagine Trent Grisham in right field with that jello arm.
Oh.
Trying to throw make assists at third base or home. It's not pretty.
Could he get it to third base?
I don't think he can.
He would skip off the second base bag. That would be his go to. Is like, I'll skip it off the second base bag right to third base.
Did you ever play Tecmo Super Bowl on Nintendo?
Of course.
You know, have you ever played as the New England Patriots? You had Steve Grogan as your quarterback, and the way it reflected quarterback skill was whether they threw a laser or whether they threw this thing that went off the screen up. A huge, like at a 60-degree angle, they'll throw it, and it actually goes off the screen and comes back down to the receiver. That's what Trent Grisham looks like. Except Tecmo Super Bowl wasn't advanced enough to simulate short throws that bounce.
A lot of football talk on the pod today.
Oh, I've heard from 760 Sports that's the way to attract a large audience on local sports talk here in San Diego.
The Patriot.
Oh, yeah. What are we now?
Sorry, Darren.
What is it now? No, real question. I don't know what the.
Oh, I don't. What is it?
I'll listen to Darren on my phone, not on. I don't even know what the station is.
Yeah.
105.3?
I don't know. No, because isn't that the rock station?
I don't know. Who listens to terrestrial radio?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You want to listen to
except
that
for our beloved Ben and Woods.
If you want to hear that bullshit, you can listen to Dave and Jeff or whatever the fuck.
Who?
Yeah, Pallet and whatever. Yeah, you can hear the third PR guy from the Chargers 20 years ago.
I don't need to listen to shows from the warehouse or whatever. All right, last one. Xander Bogaerts.
Eye test says that it's obviously much, much lower than what was expected.
Xander Bogaerts is right on the mark. His delta is 0.0. He was projected for 4 WAR. He's at 1.8 right now, and he's right on. That's what he's projected for at this point of the season.
So obviously that has a lot to do with the defense.
Sure.
Because he's actually been pretty good defensively.
But if you believe in WAR, value is value.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Yep. But he just can't fucking hit.
I mean, his OPS is over 700. He's not a below average hitter.
So that, okay, well we have.
He has no power.
We have to bring up the.
He plays shortstop, though.
The runners in scoring position thing. And this is, by the way, from Twitter. Brent says, go Padres at real Brent Reed. Okay. Runners on first and third. Bogaerts is 1-for-7 this year. Bases loaded, 0-for-7. With runners on first and second, he's 0-for-18.
Is that good? Is that good, Corey?
How is that possible? This is Xander Bogaerts. This is a professional hitter. How is that even possible?
An offensive-minded shortstop is what we were supposed to be signing. And the majority of his value right now is being derived from his defense. Where
crazy.
He actually has one of the worst arms statistically in the league at shortstop, but he's still playing the position according to the metrics as well as anyone in the league.
Yeah. When they signed him, it was like, okay, well, we know he's going to hit. That's awesome. And hopefully, after so much time, we'll move his ass to second base with his weak arm so that we can put Kim at short, who is a fucking wizard, right?
Yeah.
And instead, Xander's been pretty good defensively, or above average defensively, I would say, a pleasant surprise.
Pretty good, yeah.
But he can't hit.
So he's hitting. He's hitting above league average.
But
his WRC plus right now is 106.
But what we need,
what we expected.
Yeah.
It was 134 last year.
Yeah. But a lot of these, since he came off the... Well, he didn't even go on the IL, did he? He just took like 4 or 5 days off.
Yeah.
Yeah, when he came back after taking that break, it seems like the hits that he is getting, though, are just bullshit dribbler singles.
Yeah. He's getting hits, right?
But he's not barreling
barrels. No. Yeah.
No. He seems to have no power.
I always see the wrist brought up as the excuse. And sure, that's a valid thing, right? But the wrist isn't new.
No.
Like I keep seeing on Twitter, well, it happened when he got hit by Spencer Strider this year.
No.
Search on Google Xander Bogaerts and Boston Globe and wrist.
Yeah.
There's stories going back years of the wrist, and he was still able to recover. He would go through slumps, and people would say it's the wrist, and then he would go forward and put up like 6 WAR. he was pretty steady at being a 130 plus WRC plus guy. So I think what you're seeing. So the whole point of this exercise was teams look at projections. They might not use Zips, but they've got their own internal projection systems, right?
Right.
And they look at the guys they've got on the roster and they say, look, the projections are showing this is a 98 win roster. So I like to do this exercise to see where those projections were off and what can be improved in the near term. And what I see here is things that the eye test tell us, right?
Yeah.
Cronenworth at first is a huge drain on value. We're not getting the best out of our assets. Nola at catcher, huge drain, needs some improvement. Maybe not a waiver wire guy. Like Gary Sanchez is what, like 0-for-5 trillion since his hot streak? He's
like 1-for-29 or something like that?
For sure.
With a thought.
Yeah. those are significant holes. We're losing almost 4 wins in those two positions. Grisham in center. We're losing another win. Like this is kind of the exercise I'm seeing. How did we get from where we were projected at, whatever, 95 wins to being on pace for, what are we going for, 77 wins or something now?
It's so depressing to look at.
So that's what I'm seeing. And if you really want to try to fix this team on the fly, there's your holes, right?
Yeah.
It's Cronenworth. Everyone will point at Bogarts, right?
Yeah.
Bogarts isn't the problem here. He's performing just as they projected him to be. He could be better. Don't get me wrong. But, I would be happy if he was better.
Yeah, I was going to say. But it's like the that and these numbers are a little bit, they're a couple days old or whatever. But the difference with these guys and their career, we all saw it, their career numbers with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
What they've done for their entire career. And what they're doing now. And all of them are like
worse.
100 points under or something like
significantly
that.
Significantly worse.
Xander, negative 69. Carpenter, negative 104. Cronenworth, negative 108. Cruz, negative 23. Grisham, negative 93. Machado, negative 98. Nola, negative 245.
Jesus.
Tatis, negative 95. Soto negative 53. Odor plus 52. He's the only one that is hitting better with runners in scoring position this season than he has over his career. And the other guys, I mean, it's like, it's not that they're a little bit worse, it's they're significantly worse. All of those guys who, like,
to be fair with Tatis, small sample size because he's hitting leadoff, and he has a bunch of zilches hitting at the bottom of the lineup.
Yeah, right. Yeah. How often is Trent on? How often is Nolan on? How often? Yeah, almost never.
Let's talk about that for 1 second. We talked about Bob Melvin. In my opinion, Bob Melvin is doing. Look, people criticize Bruce Bochy a ton in his final years here. Even the greatest managers have things that fans can disagree with.
Yes.
My one thing, and honestly, this might be an AJ thing, not a Melvin thing, because I don't think Melvin writes the. I don't think he comes up with the lineups. I think he's handed them from AJ.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think guys.
We
are
know that was the case. With Tingler, Green, Barajas.
I don't know if
Murphy,
Melvin would. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Bud.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know.
But
that's a tough one. Yeah.
Tatis hitting leadoff and Bogarts hitting cleanup. Given what we're seeing here, like with where these guys are performing at this point of the season, you have Xander, who has no power, whether it's the wrist, whether it's the fact that he's 30 and heading down the aging curve, I don't know.
No power.
But he doesn't have power.
No.
And then you have Tatis, our most powerful player, hitting a bunch of solo shots to start the game with no one and with no one on base because he's hitting leadoff, and it's like Grisham, Nola, whoever, Cruz,
leading
Carpenter.
The team with 15 home runs right now.
That, to
after
me, seems like the
games.
Most basic switch here. If you want to talk about lineup mechanics, and usually those things are on the margins. They don't affect the game that much. But
So the argument, I guess, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, is to give him as many plate appearances as humanly possible every single game, because he's by far your best player, and it's not close. And also, if he doesn't hit a home run, and he gets a walk, he gets a single, a double, or whatever, then he's on the base paths, and he's creating the chaos. Mm-hmm. So that's the argument. But I see what you're saying. Yes.
But we were talking about, like, what do we even do here?
Yeah.
That's something you could throw at the wall. That's something you could do an experiment with for 2 weeks.
Sure. Yeah.
It's not going to kill the season. I don't think Tatis would mind.
I would try anything at this point.
I don't think Bogarts would mind.
By the way, he's not leading off today. Tatis is not.
Where is he?
I think he's second.
Okay.
I believe it's... I think Kim might be leading off today.
Okay.
I'm with you 100%. Yeah, Kim's leading off today. Tatis is second. Soto, Manny, Sanchez, Cronenworth, Cruz, Dixon is at first, and Grisham in center field.
Okay, so they
Cronenworth
benched,
is at second.
They benched Bogarts, which I, you know, with his health issue, maybe you want to give him some rest.
Give him a day. Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to use any lineup that has Brandon Dixon in it as a model for how things should or will go. But look, that's my recommendation. You know, yeah, I'm looking. I get the logic. You want to get him as many at bats. Fine, move him to third. Get him a few more at bats.
No, that makes sense.
But Bogaerts is one tool at this point is, I guess, getting on base.
Occasionally getting his C&I single. Right. Yeah, so put him at...
But,
lead off or
it's not being a lower? Run. It's not being a run producer.
No, it's definitely not.
So that's all I got.
But yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, and the other thing is like,
look, the rotation's set.
Manny is the same way. It seems like we're getting a lot of double plays out of him. We're getting a lot of double plays out of Cronenworth.
Yeah.
You
look at holes on this team, and I always see people like, hey, maybe we should get Corbin Burns in here at the deadline.
Isn't he just getting smoked?
Yeah, aside from that, like, you know, whoever the Corbin Burns of the minute is, you know?
Yeah.
The problem's not the rotation. They're almost all outperforming, and Musgrove is the outlier with a bunch of extenuating circumstances. That's not going to improve the team that much.
You're
trying to look at the delta of, okay, I get this player. He is this much WAR better than what we've got.
Yeah.
The obvious gaps here, you know, again, are catcher, first base, center field. Because Manny's not going anywhere.
No.
He's been a hole so far, but you know he's not going anywhere. So that's fixed.
And the thing with Manny is, like, starting today, Manny could go 3-for-4 with a home run and a couple of doubles and 5 RBI.
Yeah.
And then he could go on a streak because that's...
We have more faith in that he can do that than we do for Austin Nola digging out of his -0.8 hole.
We know that's not happening. Yeah. We know Grisham's not going to start hitting
400. He is what he 400. Is, right?
Right, exactly. But we know Manny can...
He might start fielding better, Manny which would improve his
that.
Metrics. But
Manny can do that. Yeah. We know that.
And if you really want to narrow it down, I keep looking at first base. It's supposed to be a hitting position. You've not only put a subpar first baseman in the position, you've sapped Cronenworth's value by moving him out of a position where his bat played at a well above league average level. It's just all around, it's a bad decision. He's been great defensively, though. It's been, anyone's better than Hosmer.
No, but I mean,
he's good. He actually stretches.
He's really good at
stretching.
He doesn't
stand behind the base when he receives
throws. He can dig it. Yeah. He's
good.
He's been good.
Yeah.
Like, really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's that. But most teams don't want a glove-only first baseman. If you're going to have a glove-only position, it's actually catcher or center field.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So I really look at first base.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk innovation.
Okay.
We had some long meetings coming, some brainstorming meetings on how can we get one up the competition here? What's our competitive advantage? And it's really our creativity.
It really is.
We sat down with a whiteboard and we came up with all kinds of wild ideas for this podcast because we don't want to be stale.
No.
We care about our listeners.
Yeah.
We're not running the same bits out there. Like the other guys.
Just because the content is free doesn't mean it shouldn't be premium content.
Exactly. That's our slogan here.
That's it right there.
Premium, free, ad-free content.
Yes.
You don't see us starting the show with 10 minutes of ads. We're not breaking in the middle for ads. Even Pods Pod had a commercial break in the middle. You don't see that here.
No, absolutely not.
And so... We are pleased to announce, this isn't actually a full secret, we had to put it out on Twitter last night, but we are ready to unveil a new segment using different technologies to create content here, using the power of the telephone to have messages transmitted through the air into our studios. So we can hear what our listeners think about our beloved Padres and about our podcast.
So do you want to start?
Do we have a title for it?
Oh, no.
We didn't cover this in the brainstorming session.
No. But we'll have to come up with a title for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interim. The interim name is voicemails.
So because it's so new and so fresh, we ended up with only 2 voicemails. But we're expecting a lot more the next time we pod.
Yeah.
So do you want to start with the real... serious question?
Sure. Let's get that out of the way. Okay. We wanted bits. Look, here's the thing.
Yeah. We appreciate that. We appreciate this voicemail. Thank you for the question. I don't even think you even left your name. I can read off your telephone number, though. It's 85. I'm just kidding. But we were, yeah. So, but here we go. Let me see if I can even get this thing going so that we can listen to it.
Boys, I'm calling.
Wait. Okay, we're gonna restart it. Here we go.
Hey, Grindelwald's boys. I'm calling because last episode I heard HJ kind of go back and forth on how he feels about House on Kim. Corey seems to be pro-Kim. HJ seems to be kind of anti-Kim, but doesn't actually want to say it out loud. I've got a couple stats for you guys here. Kim has currently an OPS plus of 98. He's technically, according to Baseball Reference, a below average hitter. But according to Baseball Reference WAR, he is also currently number 8 in the entire league among position players in WAR. I'm curious, because I know a lot of people said that Kim was a great player based on his Baseball Reference WAR last season. Now Baseball Reference sees him as a top 8 player among all hitters while being a below-average hitter. Do you guys think that Baseball Reference WAR is a bullshit statistic, or is his defense at second really so good that he...
Well, Baseball Reference WAR is stupid. B WAR, only zeros use B WAR. Everyone's using F WAR.
I will say this. I am pro Kim because I love our beloved Prince Kim. Also,
and you're not racist.
And I'm not racist.
Yes.
Also, is he better than Mookie Betts? Of course he's better than Mookie Betts. And why? Because Mookie Betts is a fucking Dodger.
Yes.
So yes, he is better than every single Dodger player currently on the roster, on their IL, and in the past.
Yeah, in the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame, yeah. All of them. Even the Dodgers in the Padres Hall of Fame, he's better than that guy too. So yes, I am 100% pro Kim, and his glove is sick.
It is. And we talked about, actually, did I do Kim? Yeah, I did it.
Yeah, you did.
Kim has equal WAR with Xander Bogaerts right now. He's at 1.8. Most of that's defense.
Yes.
And what you said isn't false. He is at, like, after last night, I think he's at 99 WRC plus.
Okay.
That means he's a below league average hitter. But at his position, he's an above average hitter. And so, yeah, you can both be sub league average across all players and be more valuable than the majority of second basemen, be a better hitter than the majority of second basemen while being a below league average hitter. That's why shortstops that can hit are so valuable, because most shortstops suck at hitting. So Ha-Sun Kim is that valuable, and I believe that. I think that he's been that valuable on this team. I think it's a multiplier. His defensive skills are a multiplier for the pitchers and for Jake Cronenworth and for Xander Bogaerts at shortstop. Like, that's incredibly valuable to the team. So I believe in it. Look, he's on a pace to be like an 8 WAR player. He's on pace to be like a 3 WAR player, which I think if you look at him, I think he is.
I think
a lot of people have this memory of Ha-Sun Kim when he was like a 50 WRC plus hitter and could only field. He's not that guy anymore. He, like, to have a second baseman that's a full-on league average hitter, that's a big deal. That's difficult to find.
Especially with that glove. I mean,
right.
The place he makes, I mean, he is incredible. He really is. Just a spectacular glove. Really.
Super glove, and to be honest, I'm going to go back to his hitting. I think his hitting is fine.
Yeah.
It's better than fine for that position.
Yeah. And honestly, he's in a kind of a bad stretch right now. You know, like, and he can get on, goes on these little streaks.
Sure.
They're not super long, but he goes through little streaks where he starts really popping it.
Yeah.
If he goes on a couple one of those, then he's, you know.
Yeah, look, he's better than Jake Cronenworth at hitting this year. He's taking aside the defense, he's a better hitter than Jake Cronenworth, who was extended for 8 years in the offseason.
Also, he steals bags.
Yes, which adds to his value.
Yes, big right? time. Yeah, yeah. Also, as far as the entire, all of baseball, his H-WAR, I'm just talking about his hair.
Yeah.
Number one.
That's why he bucks his head to knock his helmet off.
to maximize the value of his H-War.
I want that helmet coming off as often as humanly possible. And see, and then how he does this, that flip back with his head to let it go, and then he puts it back on. Oh my God.
We've got a rule here. We've got a rule here in the HJ household. When the helmet comes off, the pants drop.
Boom!
Look, all the kids know it around here. They know the rules. You get out of the room when the helmet flies off.
Okay.
That's so, daddy time.
Daddy time. So now should we go to our second?
Let's go to that. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm interested to hear.
So I'm not even going to do that. I think I'm just going to start it, and then we'll just go from there.
We'll talk about it.
Yeah, and then we'll, So.
And when I say great, I haven't heard any of these, so hit me with your best shot.
I mean dumpster fire. There's one that I see that we missed a few weeks ago, actually a month ago. And this first one is one that I'm just going to play it.
Okay. Hey, guys. Greg Garcia. I just want to let you know that sometimes I fart when I come.
Well, it sounded to me like noted marijuana addict Eric LaBoob and Danny Ortiz.
It did. Yeah, and that's exactly who I believe it was.
I'd heard that Eric was going to try to undermine our innovation here.
Yes, of course.
And to me, it's just sad that he had to go to OpenAI, generate a false, you know, as if they had a call-in segment like this. This is something that the podcast community has never seen before.
What kind of a scumbag, by the way, would call in and say something like that and pretend to be a Padres player?
Right. Like, I mean, come on. Look.
Nobody's believing that.
Everyone knows Greg Garcia can hold his flatulence in when he comes.
Exactly. Everyone knows that.
Appalling. And it's exactly, you know, this is the kind of thing that AI detectors can find, where they can see these things that just, they don't look quite right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's, I don't know if it's the marijuana talking with Eric or what, but it's just sad. It's sad.
I just want to help him because I love him.
Maybe 5.5 will put out a podcast and you're going to see they're going to copy this voicemail segment and claim it as their own, which is to me just ridiculous.
What is Danny going to go driving through Skid Row to find Eric laying on the sidewalk
box
with a marijuana joint stuck out of his arm?
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck,
guys.
Good luck with that.
Look, jealousy is not a good luck for you guys.
It's not. It really isn't. Yeah. It really isn't.
Well, hey, another great innovation here at Gwintelligence Labs for another great bit on the show. I will say, if you want to contribute for a future episode, the phone number, 619-786-6512.
And it doesn't have to be baseball related.
Yeah, like, it can be bits. We anything. Like bits.
You can ask about anything.
We even played an AI created call. Like, yes. We'll play anything over here.
Come on.
Yeah.
Give us something fun.
Yeah.
Or if you want dirt.
Yeah.
Ask. we're happy to air it out.
Yes.
Yes.
All right, Corey. We've said it all here.
We have
another said it great all. Episode of completely free ad-free content. Number one. Free podcast.
Premium free content.
Yeah. Didn't waste your time with ads. Provided bits, new innovations. Just amazing.
Next week, we'll be in the hot tub.
Jacuzzi. Jacuzzi.
Oh, jacuzzi.
Yeah.
That's right. Jacuzzi. Waxed.
Ready to go.
Ready to roll.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the Padres don't get swept. Running Brandon Dixon out there. Ha-Sung Kim in leadoff. 99 WRC plus in leadoff. That's who you want with the most at bats.
I'm excited to be talking about brand new Padres manager Mike Schilt next week.
It's going to be exciting. All right, Corey. Go Padres.
Go Padres.
Catch it!